Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live from the Blog Talk Radio studios in the heart of Hudson County, folks. You know, it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to thank you all for joining us here tonight, the 10th of October, the year 2019. Of course, I want to thank you all for tuning in from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State and, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. You can write to the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. I do answer all my emails promptly, so make sure that when you write to me, folks, whether it's about feedback about episodes or guests or even future suggestions for either or, do me a favor, write to me. I do get back to you very promptly, I promise. PoliticallyDirectNJ@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, folks, at PoliticallyDirectNJ. You can also follow me on Instagram as well, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also hit me up on Twitter, folks, at Professor F. Uribe. And for all you Facebook subscribers, take a moment. Please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, ladies and gentlemen. Call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, our toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Insider NJ. And don't forget to check out Insider NJ, ladies and gentlemen, by going to www.insidernj.com for the absolute best coverage of the political scene throughout the state of New Jersey. Folks, outstanding columnist, starts off with the editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, of course, working all the way across the aisle here with my other great teammates, which include Fred Snowflack, the great Al Sullivan, the Dean of Hudson County Journalism, Jay Lassiter, and many, many more. So check out the best columnists, the best journalism. It's brought to you every single day by Insider NJ. Again, check out www.insidernj.com. Don't forget to like Insider NJ on Facebook and also follow Insider NJ on Twitter. And once you're on the website, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget, upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on it. And guess what? You'll be automatically enrolled free of charge in the morning intelligence briefing. Again, www.insidernj.com, folks. The best coverage, the best journalism you'll find anywhere. It ends, it begins and it ends, again, with Insider NJ. Folks, again, don't forget to like it on Facebook. Of course, follow it on Twitter. And believe me, you can't go wrong, folks. When it comes to the best journalism anywhere in the Garden State, look no further. Look, you can always look to Insider NJ. All right, folks, again, 818-572-8032, toll-free number tonight to call in. I'd love to hear from you. We have a great guest coming up in just a few minutes. So stick around for her. She's actually on the road. Just let me know. She's running a couple minutes late on the road, but great guest coming up. So you don't want to go anywhere. Do not change that dial here on Blog Talk Radio. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the journalists, or the staff. Again, folks, hope you had a wonderful week. And one of the things I really wanted to sort of go over, obviously, you know, we're approaching Columbus Day weekend. Yes, folks, that's right. I did say Columbus Day. It's not Indigenous Peoples Day. It's not whatever other stupid, politically correct nonsense you want to force feed down our throats. So hopefully for a lot of you, for my students, obviously, for some, it might be a long weekend. So in advance, I do want to wish you a happy Columbus Day weekend. A lot of things going on. Obviously, this Sunday, for example, great football game at MetLife Stadium. Going with my dad to catch my Dallas Cowboys visit the New York Jets. Should be a good game. Should be a good turnout, I think, weather-wise. And I think it should be a good turnout by Cowboys Nation that will be invading East Rutherford on Sunday at 4:25. So looking forward to that this weekend. Of course, lots of great things going on with the fall weather, of course, ahead of us. And, of course, you know, no better place to enjoy than right here in the North Jersey, New York City metropolitan area. No disrespect to my friends down in South Jersey or down the Jersey Shore, but great things going on here during the fall season. So, again, folks, 818-572-8032. Toll-free number again tonight brought to you by Insider NJ. And, again, we'll have a great guest in coming up in a few moments. But, folks, you know, it got me thinking today as I was, you know, leaving class, my night class, and started to get me thinking about Columbus Day and what it means. And that is the subject of my first shot. And, folks, you know, listen, coming up on Monday, a lot of my students and a lot of my fellow teachers obviously will have off because Columbus Day is a holiday. I know some people will have off from school in general, so that'll be great. But, you know, it's always interesting to me because, you know, for all sort of like the liberal and politically correct nonsense we're going to hear about and read about in the coming days leading up to Monday, right, on Columbus Day, let me make something very clear to people because I think that, you know, and this is not the academic in me, this is not the, you know, the Fernando filter tonight or lack thereof, but folks, you know, this is something that drives me crazy about, you know, the social justice crowd or those that are woke. In today's political culture. And it just kind of drives me crazy because I sit here and I try to, you know, listen, one of the things I take a lot of pride in on this program is being tolerant and accepting all points of view. But, you know, folks, there comes a point, I think, sometimes when, you know, what you try to do, I think, is, you know, try to be, I think in that sense, you know, try to be, you know, as informed as possible and anything else. And I don't know what it is, but it seems like a lot of my liberal friends thrive on just being like this tedious and outrageous when it comes to political correctness. And I think this is where part of the Democratic Party nationally and even statewide are losing people because of this sort of incessant fixation on identity politics, on, you know, social justice, social engineering, this perpetual, you know, victimhood, you know, just sort of being obsessed with everything being put correct and we can't offend anybody and we have to be so careful. You know, folks, and again, and I don't have a problem saying this, this is the reason why I'm convinced that next year Donald Trump is going to get reelected president. And the reason I say this is because, not because I think I have some crystal ball or I can look into the future. No, it's not about that. But when we see this sort of social justice or political correct nonsense being force-fed down our throats on our college campuses, even in our high schools, even as young as elementary school folks, we're seeing teachers and educators attempt to indoctrinate students with this politically correct nonsense. And something, you know, when I think about Columbus Day, you know, I think about what it means on Monday. Folks, listen, newsflash, okay? Before Columbus arrived on our shores hundreds of years ago, okay, do you think that Native Americans and indigenous people, right, that were already living in this area Do you think that they gather at a table somewhere to sort of like discuss how to appropriate land and settle disputes? No, folks, newsflash, they were slaughtering each other, okay? And I know that for some people on the left, reading about history is a struggle, right? Because they don't want to, or they don't want to just sort of, they want to stay in their sort of like little social justice bubble or politically correct bubble. But it's the truth. And this is why the outrage during, you know, Columbus Day weekend or leading up to Columbus Day. And that's why I always get a good laugh at the expense of these people when I have to hear this. Folks, listen, newsflash. This is what happens when settlers arrive anywhere. It's happened on this continent, in addition to happening on other continents on this planet for hundreds of years. Okay? And I say this all the time to my, you know, liberal colleagues in academia, to liberal friends on Facebook and social media that are always crying and complaining about something, okay? Like, get over yourselves and your fake outreach. Like, it's nauseating. It really is. It's nauseating to see this on my newsfeed. And what's really interesting to me, folks, is, you know, I sort of think about it in this sense. You know, I think about, you know, 95% of the people that are bitching about Columbus Day, I guarantee you, are probably, like, get 100% of their colonial historical information from either like internet memes or like just watching like Disney's Pocahontas. Okay. Again, here's a newsflash, everybody listening tonight. Everyone's ancestors brutalized someone else's ancestors. Okay. Welcome to the human race. Can we move on already and let the rest of us just enjoy the day off? Right. Even if you're incapable of doing so, fine. Go be miserable. Go be an annoying, you know, politically correct, social justice, woke, you know, perpetual victimhood, identity politics, you know, fake outrage person. Go do all that on your own time. Don't bother me with your nonsense. Don't come and annoy me with your woke mentality or trying to sort of say to me, well, Fernando, it's just important to sort of recognize what happened. Okay, we did. It happened. You know, what do you want to do about it? You know, like, what do you want to do? It's always astounding to me when I hear people on the left that cry this sort of perpetual nonsense, whether it's on social media, whether we see it on cable news, whether it's journalists, whether it's academics, whether it's activists. Like, I get it. You know what? No one likes to hear about people being slaughtered. No one wants to hear about that. I get it, but it happened. It's happened since the beginning of time, folks. We're humans. We're territorial. And when we want territory, 9 times out of 10, we're not going to sit at the table and talk about it. We're going to do something physical about it. And that's what's happened throughout human history. And I just sometimes, you know, I sit here and it just drives me crazy when I read my newsfeed. And I remember that in previous years, I posted this as a status on social media. And by and large, I think people gravitate to me and say, hey, Fernando, listen, you're right. And thankfully, you know, I'm glad that someone like you is out there sort of, you know, putting forth transparent truth and out, you know, whether it's in social media, whether it's on your media platforms, on your podcast here on Politically Direct or on Wednesday nights, you know, with Talking to Hudson, also on Blog Talk Radio, or even with Talking Politics that I host with Hudson Media Group. I think what I try to do, folks, every single week is just be consistent on this. And this is one of the things that kind of, again, drives me crazy about the left. And not every Democrat, because I don't want to paint with a broad brush. You know, I don't want to do that. But a lot of people who identify as liberals or progressives, again, it drives me nuts. And I'm not some intolerant conservative, because I'm not. I'm actually not even really conservative. I might embrace some conservative views when it comes to policy. I think some social issues, but I think I tend to be sort of very much in the middle. I might be even center left, I think, on some social issues as well. So the idea that what you're hearing tonight is like some rant from some crazy right winger, well, that's just not the case, because that's just not who I am. You know, it just isn't. I think what I try to do is be someone that's, you know, philosophically consistent and also intellectually honest. And that's what I bring to the program here, folks, every week here with you. And I think what I try to do is be someone that is going to tell you the facts and tell you things that you need to hear. And again, so, you know, for those of us enjoying, you know, Columbus Day weekend, enjoy it. You know, again, please party responsibly. you know, go make the most of it. I think the weather should be somewhat decent, I think, here in the North Jersey, New York City area, from what my understanding is, coming up this weekend. But without question, I think what we have to do, I think, is sort of look at this in a way that is productive. And again, all this fixation on political correctness, it's not productive, folks. It just isn't. It's one of those things that you sit there, and, you know, it kind of reminds me of normally on Fridays, I don't watch it live because I'm not home, most likely. But one of the things I respect, for example, about Bill Maher and his show Real Time on HBO is, listen, there are a lot of liberal positions I don't embrace with Bill Maher, you know. But the two things that he gets right, I mean, consistently, is his disdain for political correctness and talking the truth and telling the truth specifically about Islam. Those are two issues that I'm very much on board with him about. You know, again, it's one of those things that, you know, if you're a liberal, you know, you can't subscribe to some of the lunacy that's out there. And at least when it pertains to Bill Maher, I give him credit. He's a guy that, you know, yes, he embraces a lot of liberal positions and fine, he's entitled to do that. But when it comes to, like, again, fake outrage and, you know, victimhood and identity politics and being woke and all this social justice nonsense, again, he gets it right. And, you know, I'm not sure if he'll do a monologue on Columbus Day, about Columbus Day specifically, but, you know, I wanted to share that with you today because it's just something that just drives me crazy. You know, again, listen, you know, I don't want to sit here and, you know, be repetitive, but folks, we need to move on. You know, let the rest of us enjoy the deal. Again, if you're incapable of doing that, then that's on you. Too bad for you. Good riddance. I don't care, you know. But don't be a nuisance and don't be just an annoyance to us on a holiday. God knows we all need it. We all work very hard. And for some of us, Columbus Day is simply a mental health day. So if we can use that to relax and decompress and recharge our batteries, then let's do that. I think the last thing we need to do is be inundated with, you know, politically correct nonsense, which is a lot, I think, of what the left is advocating for coming up on Monday. So again, folks, as a reminder, happy Columbus Day. That's how I'm going to refer to it. And I hope that today I give you a little bit of an education and hopefully you'll do the same as well. And that's my first shot right here on Politically Direct. All right, folks, again, 818-572-8032. Toll free number again, 818-572-8032. And our toll free number again is brought to you by Insider NJ. Folks, as a reminder, we are in October here, and it is indeed Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So, folks, as you know, obviously, we've been looking at my social media platforms, obviously, donating this month to a professor's quest to save breasts will go a long way to benefit the American Cancer Society and, more importantly, the Making Strides Against Breast Cancer campaign. So, again, if you've been checking out my Instagram, the Facebook page for Politically Direct, also on my Twitter, you'll see the link where you can donate there. And folks, this year, I'm really, really proud to partner here in Hudson County with the North Hudson Regional Firefighters Association and the North Hudson Regional Fire Officers Association. So those are locals 3950 and 3951, respectively. I'm really proud to partner with them. Certainly, their proceeds from their T-shirt sales will benefit any professor's quest to save breasts. I've raised a few hundred dollars already online, so I'm very happy about that. Hopefully, we can continue to do that for the rest of October as we are, again, well underway during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So, again, check it out. I look forward to your donation, whatever you can. It is safe and secure and tax deductible, so do check it out online. The link is there. And, you know, and if you're not sure, just Google a professor's quest to save breasts 2019. You'll see all the information there. And folks, together, let's defeat breast cancer once and for all. And hopefully that's what we'll be doing here in 2019. Again, 818-572-8032. Toll free number here tonight. We have a great guest coming up in a few moments, folks. She's running a little bit late on the road. Again, in the meantime, just a little bit of a rundown here. Some interesting stories, folks, again. And listen, when it comes to the best journalism, I said it before and I'll say it again, look no further than Insider NJ. Great columns, breaking news all the time with the outstanding journalists that we have with Insider NJ. And a couple of things here, folks. looking at the what I would argue is a very interesting time now, obviously less than a month ago until Election Day. And really at the top of the ticket here in New Jersey, we're looking at the assembly races. All 80 assembly seats are up for grabs. Some competitive districts not up here where I live in Hudson County. I think all three legislative districts, the 31st, the 32nd, the 33rd, collectively, all the races are not competitive. So there's no reason to believe that the assemblymen and assemblywomen occupying those seats are in any danger. They're not. But there are other seats throughout New Jersey, other districts that, quite frankly, you know, could be very, very interesting, I think, when it comes to, you know, sort of looking at how the legislature is going to be shaping out after Election Day. So I think you definitely want to be able to look at that. And but very interesting article today, folks. I know Assemblywoman Holly Schapizzi out of the 39th Legislative District, and, of course, also is an assistant Republican leader in the State Assembly. You know, one of the things that I think is fascinating about Assemblywoman Schapizzi is the idea that there's some hope on the horizon. And, you know, what I think that she talks about, you know, consistently, you know, in her platform is making sure that, you know, she can keep that seat. And at the same time, you know, I think what she's been alluding to, I think, is something that has been, you know, I think brewing in New Jersey, is the idea that, you know, I think liberal policies are turning people off in New Jersey. I think what we've seen with Governor Murphy, and listen, I don't fault the governor. I think, you know, he ran on a very progressive platform, very liberal platform. So he didn't lie to you. I think when, during the summer of 2017, he told you exactly what he was going to do. He told you exactly if he won, how he was going to govern, and he's lived up to that. Now, whether you agree with it or not, that's your prerogative. I would argue that, hey, I can't be mad at what he's doing because he didn't lie to us. He's doing exactly what he said he was going to do, to try to raise the minimum wage. He's trying to advocate for marijuana legalization. Clearly, the governor has been, you know, advocating for illegals in New Jersey. And, you know, for a lot of taxpayers and citizens, that doesn't sit well with them. And that doesn't make them racist. Listen, my parents are, you know, they became American citizens decades ago, but they're hardworking. They came here. They since then retired, living off their pensions, you know, and rightfully so. They worked hard for it. So, you know, but I think that, you know, even them, you know, understand that sometimes, you know, we're looking at some dangerous times right now in New Jersey, whether it's the idea of providing, say, tuition rates for illegals or the children of illegals, or the idea of trying to designate, you know, driver's licenses for illegals. You know, we've heard of all those arguments, you know, or the idea that, that Governor Murphy, via his attorney general, Gurbir Grewal, has explicitly told police departments throughout the state of New Jersey, specifically sheriff's departments, not to cooperate with ICE. So, I mean, I think that's a position I think that probably sets off a lot of individuals in New Jersey. Not necessarily that makes them, like, you know, these are folks, this isn't a conservative, I think, type of issue. I think it's one of those type of dynamics where people are just concerned about, well, what direction is New Jersey going in? You know, who is Trenton trying to appease? Who is Trenton serving? And I think for a lot of homeowners and taxpayers, whether it's my parents or anybody else, they're just concerned that the governor is only sort of appealing to one demographic, and that's either the far left or illegals in New Jersey, when he should really be, I think, serving taxpayers and homeowners and residents and citizens. And I think a lot of New Jerseyans that fit those demographics, I think, feel left out or they feel alienated. And who can blame them? You know, when you're looking at some of these policies that the governor is trying to sort of invoke and everything and trying to sort of impose in his own agenda and subsequently trying to see if the legislature will follow suit with his whether or not they, you know, they fall in line with Governor Murphy. So interesting times, and certainly, you know, the Assemblywoman, I think, is looking at probably, you know, one of those things that, you know, Assemblywoman, you know, Schapizzi is concerned about. you know, looking at whether or not Trenton is actually serving people. Now, again, for someone like her and other Republicans in Trenton, clearly they are in the minority. We're looking at distinct disadvantages for Republicans in the legislature. We're basically seeing a one-party rule here in New Jersey with a Democratic governor and with the Democratic Party having staunch control of both chambers of the legislature, again, the state Senate and the state assembly. It remains to be seen, I think, what's going to, I think, happen, as it says, to, you know, what's going on in, here in New Jersey. And obviously, I think what a lot of homeowners and taxpayers, I think, are trying to, you know, at least get answers. And I think that I remember having NJGOP Chairman Doug Steinhardt on a few months ago, talking about this being sort of like the Murphy midterms, and then hopefully some competitive districts that maybe Republicans can seize coming up on November the 5th. There's a lot of disenchantment statewide, folks, when it comes to Governor Murphy, whether or not he's actually working, for New Jersey. It's interesting to me, I think, about what's been going on with platforms and everything else in the Garden State. So, you know, without question, I think it's going to be on the minds of a lot of voters, folks, here in 2019 leading up to Election Day. So without a doubt there, you know, obviously if you didn't have a chance to check out the column, do read it. Really, really good one on InsiderNJ.com. Folks, another great article here. I sort of want to just, you know, remind you about this. And this is something that, you know, I think it tells us a lot about the sort of direction of where the Democratic Party in New Jersey is headed towards. And interesting article also this week on NJ.com, on InsiderNJ, was sort of documenting the fact that this Saturday the governor will be traveling to the state of Florida. He'll be a keynote speaker at the Florida Democratic Party Convention in Orlando. And apparently, according to sources here, of course, ahead of a historic 2020 presidential election, the battleground state of Florida, specifically Florida Democrats, expect about 1,500 people in attendance on Saturday. And certainly Governor Murphy will be anchoring a general session during Saturday afternoon. I know that, Governor Murphy is the chair-elect of the Democratic Governors Association, and he's indeed set to lead the group next year in 2020. I think without a doubt, Governor Murphy wants to be, out in the forefront. I think laying out the case for whoever the Democratic nominee is. And without question, I think it's going to be interesting as to, A, who Governor Murphy is going to be endorsing, and also I think at the same time, who Governor Murphy will be cheering for coming up this Saturday when he travels out of the state. Again, folks, you know, why the governor needs to be traveling out of the state to go galvanize Florida Democrats. I mean, hey, whatever, it's on the taxpayer dollar. You know, what can you say? You know, I'm sure there were many times during the 8 years of Governor Chris Christie that the governor traveled out of the state for functions. I know he was the chair of the Republican Governors Association. So very much the way that Governor Christie got some grief for his travels in that position. Listen, I just hope that the media in New Jersey swear and will sort of hold Governor Murphy accountable and to the same standard. Now, how much scrutiny he faces, I don't know. We'll find out in terms of media here in the Garden State and how much they scrutinize Governor Murphy as opposed to his predecessor. We'll see. Folks, again, 9:28 here on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio, folks. Coming up right now, I just want to welcome to the program and welcome her back. She is the director of the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Rights. The great Johanna Gaia joined us here on Politically Direct. Johanna, how are you, sweetie?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Johanna, first and foremost, I want to thank you for your patience. I know that last week we were scheduled to have our show, and technology sometimes doesn't always cooperate.
That's right.
the engineers at Blog Talk Radio took days to fix the problem. I don't know. And being Latino, I don't really have a filter sometimes. So you can imagine what my emails look like to tech support.
I understand.
Yeah, definitely. I'll sort of let my audience know they were not safe for work. Let's just leave it at that. So, but
understand. You were trying to kick something. I get it.
Yeah, but Johanna, great to have you on here. I know you've been you've been very generous with your time today. I know you're on the road coming back from a function. So again, I appreciate you dedicating some time to us tonight. Let's get started quick here, Johanna. Johanna, obviously it's been some time, I think, since I had you on the program here. I know I've had you on my local podcast, but I know it's been a little time since I've had you on this podcast with Insider NJ. What can you share with our audience tonight in terms of any news, whether it be legislatively or anything having to do with Trenton, in terms of what the organization's been doing, what it's been striving to do, and any sort of accomplishments, you know, you wish to sort of highlight tonight?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of accomplishments, we work really closely to basically advocate for law enforcement to build trust with immigrant communities and ensure that immigrant communities understand the difference between your local law enforcement and your federal ICE agent. So that has been a really big effort that we've been working on. And then at the legislative level, we've also been working with elite sponsors to push for driver's licenses for all, regardless of immigration status. And that's actually one of the major efforts that we're working on right now. It has not passed yet. But we're really hoping that we can make it a reality soon.
Well, let's dissect this a little bit one at a time, because I think you bring up some very interesting topics, and certainly for our audience that is listening to you for the first time, I think let's sort of break this down. I know that Attorney General Grewal has come under some scrutiny by some New Jerseyans, obviously, whether it be social media, radio stations, whatever, about whether or not law enforcement in New Jersey should defy the Attorney General's directive, specifically, let's say, certain counties and certain sheriffs. I think that there have been some counties down the shore. I believe there have been some advocates in Monmouth County, maybe Ocean County. And whether it's law enforcement themselves or just citizens, residents saying, hey, listen, you know, we applaud the sheriff for doing what he's supposed to be doing. And if helping ICE is part of the law enforcement process, some advocates would say, hey, the hell with the Attorney General. Let law enforcement do its job, and if they have to work with ICE collaboratively, then let them do that. When you've heard that, Johanna, what's been your response, or what's been your feeling when you've seen that rhetoric, whether it be on social media, whether you've seen it in press conferences, or you've seen it in the news?
Well, I think it's clear that there's a misunderstanding, either because there's lack of understanding of what's going on with immigration policy and with immigration law. It is not federally required for local law enforcement to do immigration enforcement. Immigration enforcement is a federal role, right? And I know a lot of folks who also feel this way also support the difference in the separation between your federal roles and your state, right? Like those folks also believe that states should have the ability to make their own choices. So in this case, the fact is that federal agents, federal immigration enforcement, could still do the work that they are tasked to do, whether I agree with it or not. The issue is that local law enforcement have their own role, right? And that is public safety. I think there's some rhetoric that is easy and sexy out there with actually nothing to back it up, which is to imply that not turning someone over to ICE who does not qualify for some sort of major concern because they have been released from a facility because they're, let's say it was a minor offense, marijuana offense, for instance, right, which we're dealing with right now in New Jersey. We're talking about legalizing marijuana. If someone is picked up for a marijuana offense, why should that have anything to do with their immigration status? If someone's picked up for any minor offense like that, right, like the Attorney General, I think has been very clear with the fact that people who pose a public threat and public safety are not necessarily part of this directive. And law enforcement is not being prevented from following the criminal justice system and following the criminal law the way they already do. That's not what this is doing. They can go ahead and continue to keep the community safe the way they have always done. The difference is that for immigrant communities are less likely to call police if they have witnessed a crime or if they've been victims of a crime, is they think that that local officer is going to be working with Immigration Services. And then that makes our communities less safe. I would want any neighbor of mine who witnesses a crime to feel comfortable calling the police and speaking out against that, right? Like, and I think it also implies in some ways, I think that kind of rhetoric makes the assumption or the accusation that somehow immigrant communities are less safe or that immigrants are less likely to care about crime. Immigrant communities don't want somebody that is going to threaten their public safety either, right? Immigrants, you know, are not looking to protect a murderer. Like, that's not what we're looking to do. But we want to make sure that a victim of domestic violence, for instance, can call the police and not be afraid. And that's what this policy would do.
Well, you know what, Johanna, I think the way you just explained it to us tonight and our audience specifically, I think you make a lot of reasonable points. I can understand where you're coming from. You know, being the son of immigrants, living in an area where, you know, where I live in Union City is predominantly very densely populated, very Latino-centric, of course, when it comes to, you know, communities and populations. So, I hear what you're saying, and I can respect where you're coming from a policy perspective, but it just seems that whether it's, you know, it seems that maybe statewide, and I don't want to sort of paint with a broad brush, but maybe in some instances, Johanna, maybe there's a little bit of a tint, maybe of racism or prejudice that's existing, I think, when it comes to enforcement or the idea that, you know, local law enforcement should be working with ICE, because at the end of the day, it's about the rule of law and following federal law. So I think, you know, some residents might just say, well, Johanna, I get what you're saying, and from a procedural and bureaucratic perspective, you make sense. But at the end of the day, I care about just the law. I care about following federal law, and so be it, right? So I think that there's always going to be that conflict, right, that exists, right, between sort of looking at it from a, let's say, for myself as an academic, I can understand where you're coming from, and your policy proposals make sense. But let's say from, let's say, a regular layman in New Jersey, I think maybe they may struggle with that, right?
Maybe. I mean, I think that the average, you know, New Jerseyan understands the difference between what a local officer is doing on a day-to-day basis, right? Officers are trying to keep their community safe, and they want and want to make sure that everyone in their community is comfortable interacting with them, right? Like, I think that's a pretty simple thought. I don't think there's anything complicated about that. I think people also understand that there are roles for federal agencies, right? And that federal agencies are doing a separate job. That's what they're doing. Immigration enforcement is a civil offense, right? Mostly civil offenses. So there's a federal agency for that. They are going to be doing that job continuously. That is what they're doing still. No one is defying or preventing them from doing their job. I think there's a misunderstanding that somehow they need local law enforcement's help to do what they do. Every time somebody is ever in an interaction with law enforcement locally, at any given point, right, you are booked, your fingerprints are put into a database. Every federal agency gets information like that. ICE gets that information all the time. They can go ahead and find that person. They can go to a judge and ask for that judge to file, to allow them to transfer from one custody to another. They can go ahead and go through the processes the way we expect. You know, we watch Law and Order. We ask, right? Like, there are judicial processes that everyone has to go through to be able to get custody from one agency to another. That's not what ICE is asking, though. What ICE is asking is for a local officer or a local agency to hold someone for them, regardless of whether a judge has deemed them deemable to move them over. That's, and actually what happens, and we've seen this across the country, is that what happens is a local law enforcement agency holds somebody for ICE and then end up in a huge liability issue because that somebody happened to have had the wrong name, happened to have just looked the part and weren't actually undocumented. There have been U.S. citizens that have been held by ICE because ICE is not necessarily the best at following civil liberties and the Constitution. So should local law enforcement be involved in potentially violating people's constitutional rights because fairly well within their own purview and their own jurisdiction? Probably not. And I think that most people understand that difference.
Okay, fair enough. And folks, if you're just joining us right now, It is 9:40 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. Here tonight with me, once again, one of my favorite regulars on this program. She is the director of the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Rights, for Immigrant Justice, the great Johanna Calle here joining us on Politically Direct. Johanna, let me switch gears for a moment because I really wanted to pick your brain about this. I believe if I remember correctly from our last conversation, we are fellow Rutgers alumnus, correct?
Yes. Yeah. That's correct.
Yes, and I believe we both got our graduate degrees from Rutgers University, so I think we share that in common,
right.
Obviously, so it's good to have that solidarity.
Yes.
I was having this conversation, I was having this conversation with some colleagues the other day, and we'll get to some topics that I touched on during my opening monologue about Columbus Day, but, it seems to me, within the Latino community, Johanna, and this is something that I have rallied against tremendously, not just on this podcast, but also on my other podcast, which has been on Talking to Hudson, the local one, and also with my studio show that I do every week, Hudson Media Group. Listen, I'm the first one, Johanna, to advocate for diversity and multiculturalism. I am the son of immigrants. I am a product of, Hispanic parents. I am someone who went to graduate school, obtained multiple graduate degrees. I'm very proud of my academics, but something that drives me crazy about academia, and it's sort of filtering its way into pop culture or, our social climate. And, I'm not a big fan of, some of the fake outrage or some of the hysteria by social justice warriors or being woke. I got to tell you, Johanna, in today's political climate, now I'm hearing people utilize sort of the acronym of, Latinx. I'm going to tell you something. This drives me crazy. And listen, I don't want to sound like my parents, because I love my parents. And, a lot of times I think, our parents have a good sense of about them in terms of their heads on their shoulders. And maybe sometimes they can be a little conservative and maybe too traditional in their values. But when I hear this nonsense, Johanna, it's like, I feel male. Really? Like, the idea of just eliminating, the idea that, especially in the Latin community, and this is not misogynist, this is not sexist, Johanna, but the idea that pronouns matter, yeah, they matter. The idea of él, ella, ellos, the idea that political correctness or this woke mentality is now infiltrating the Latino community. I'm sorry. I don't care if I sound like my parents or someone else, but this is bordering on absurd already, Johanna. And, again, as someone who's an academic, maybe I'm biased, but I was having this argument today with a colleague, and I'm like, you're not going to get me to subscribe to this nonsense. Latino, it's Latino or Latina, whatever you want to call it, but this Latinx nonsense, this has to stop, Johanna. I don't know. I want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, I think here's the thing, right? Everything, I remember growing up, my mother is a scholar of academics. She grew up learning literature, right? And Spanish literature is just such a beautiful thing to learn, right? And we talk in Spanish about the difference between castellano y español, right? There's this
sure.
big, whether you speak your Spanish the way that our, motherland, quote unquote, meant to be, right? In Spain. And the language has shifted many times, right? I mean, we also are big fans of Spanglish and how many times we butcher our language. Every time I hear mapeando, which I'm like, that's not real, but we use it, right? I feel like our language is what we make of it, and it reflects what we are as a community. And I think as a community, we're getting to the point where we're understanding that, the reality is the language is a very old language. It was based on a million different, Latin and all these other cultural things that were happening hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years ago. But also we were dealing with, where male and female was what we discussed as a community, right? And those were the genders that existed. I think now we are starting to talk about the fact that there are people out there who may not identify as male or female. Aside from, gender non-binary people, talk about trans folks, right? Talk about all those other communities that are also part of our community, right? And I think we also have to own it in the Latino community. How embracing are we of those communities, right? there are plenty of Latinos who are trans, who are also right, and who identify differently. And so, as someone who loves, you know, our love our language and I love our culture, I think it because our language and our culture has been so diverse in being able to embrace all these other phases of our lives and our world, then I think it makes sense that we would evolve a little bit to make it a little more inclusive to someone else. And, you know, people sort of choose what makes sense for them. And I think that if someone says, you know what, and it is, I mean, you know, we talk about, it is very, you know, gendered. Our language just is. And we can love it, but also we can be aware of the fact that it might affect someone who is having, you know, who's trying to understand their identity and ensure that their language reflects that identity. Yes, I understand. It's, you know, it's a big shift, but it's also, you know, we're not speaking Castellano, and I feel like we can't be purists in some things and not purists in others. And the fact is that unless everyone's speaking perfect, you know, Castellano Spanish, we all figured out a way to make the language work for us. So I think it's, you know, we got to be okay with shifting a little bit again.
Listen, I understand where you're coming from, but I hope that, I mean, maybe I'm not sure if I outlined my case adequately or thoroughly, but it just seems like a lot of this stuff just drives us crazy, Johanna. And one of the reasons, and I wanted to sort of get this on the record with you as well. I wanted to pick your brain about this as well, because I was talking about it with my class, but it just seems like, you know, And we'll get to sort of like the ideological, you know, dynamic of the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice and where it stands on sort of, you know, the ideological spectrum in a moment. But it just seems like this is the sort of stuff, Johanna, that sometimes can just turn even the most middle of the road Latino or Latina off. Like when you hear this sort of narrative and rhetoric, it just kind of drives us crazy. Never mind our parents. Like, I think when my mom asked me, you know, ¿qué es esto de Latinx? What does that mean? And I try to explain this to her. Like most mothers, we get the reaction like, ¿qué? Like, ¿qué es esto? Like, what is this?
Yeah.
And listen, I would never call my mom ignorant. Because
they said the same thing about reggaeton, though. So I feel like, I mean, they say the same thing about a bunch of things, right? That young people
decide.
No, of course.
And clearly, my mom and my dad are not. My mom and my dad are not ignorant. They're very well-read people.
Right.
But it's like anything else.
Yeah.
Whether it's maybe it's a generational disconnect. Maybe it's a generational divide that exists with this. But I mean, that's, you know, obviously, I mean, there's an age difference between my parents and I. But when I hear this sort of rhetoric, it just sort of, it tends to turn me off a little bit too, because it's just like, I think we're being a little too, I don't want to say too politically correct, but I think even that can be problematic, right?
I don't, you know, I think it depends on where it comes from and why we're doing it, right? And I think,
sure.
You know, it's easy, I think, for some of us to, like, you know, I'm a straight Latina woman, right? So I can't possibly say that I understand what it's like to be, for instance, a gay Latina woman, right? I don't know what it's like to be in the shoes of a Latina woman who happens to be, you know, a gay. And so I think part of it is just to understand that other people might be sitting in other shoes. And I understand, obviously, like, it is hard for us to think about that sometimes, but then I feel like, well, it doesn't really hurt me, right? Like, it doesn't really impact me in any way. You know, if folks want to use Latinx because they feel like it is a way to make someone else feel like they are being included, great. Like, you know, I'm also not going to berate my mother for not using Latinx because she doesn't know what it means and she doesn't understand it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if we happen to meet someone who happens to be trans or who happens to be gender non-binary, who comes home, you know, I think about this even when we think about veganism, right, or vegetarianism, right? Our communities, so my husband and I are doing this thing where we're trying to not eat meat twice a week. And for a Latina, that is really hard.
It's difficult.
It is really hard, isn't it? And so I ended up going to a Dominican place one of my veggie days, and it was, I had arroz con gandules y some tostones, and that's all I could eat because there's really nothing else, right? And I know friends who have done vegetarianism and they're Latinos, and they go home and they don't know what to do because, you know, your mom will say, like, why don't you just have some of the gandules who have, like, a bunch of pork in it, right? Like, because they still don't understand how that works. So I'm not going to berate my mother who doesn't know that. But if a friend of mine who happens to be trans comes home, I would hope that they don't use the wrong pronoun for someone who says, I would like you to call me ella o él or todos or whatever they prefer,
sure.
Right? Like, I think that there's a little bit about that. And I think our community is lovely and welcoming and loving enough to say everyone's welcome, right? Like, you know, we understand what it's like to have, you know, the neighbor and the cousins come over and, like, you don't have to be family, right? Like, we embrace all.
Sure.
So I
feel
like that's all right. And, like, and it's okay to, I think it's okay to understand that some folks may not necessarily feel comfortable making that shift, and it's okay, I think, if they're not comfortable making that shift, but also understanding that you don't have to walk around saying Latinx all the time, but if someone asks you to respect their pronoun, I think that's okay.
All right, fair enough. Listen, and you made a good observation before about the idea of, like, how much does this stuff really affect you personally? Like, the idea of, listen, I'm with you. Like, I'm a straight Latino male, Hispanic male. So the idea of, like, do I know the struggles of what a gay Hispanic man goes through? No, I don't. I've never experienced that. I get you. I definitely get where you're coming from in that sense. So I think, but again, it's one of those things where maybe it's a generational divide, or maybe an ideological divide that maybe sometimes is problematic. Keep it along the lines here in terms of some pop culture. I really want to get your thoughts on this, Joanna, because not sure if you and your husband are big binge watchers of TV shows, but I've been noticing lately in a lot of really good syndicated programs, whether it's Orange is the New Black on Netflix. I don't know if you've watched it. Great show. I don't know if you watched the most recent season, the final season.
Yes, so am I.
Or whether it is watching How to Get Away with Murder on ABC or other shows, it seems like a lot of mainstream shows, Johanna, are bringing sort of like normal everyday issues into light. And specifically, and again, I don't want to spoil it for anybody listening tonight to the program, but on the most recent season, for example, of Orange is the New Black, there was a very big fixation and an emphasis about ICE and about the detention centers, about what was going on for women that were detained in these ICE detention centers. And we've talked about this before, and let me just preface this before I ask my question. You know, one of the things what I try to do, Johanna, on this show, I think, is every week is be philosophically consistent and intellectually honest.
Yeah.
And one of the things one of the things I have no trouble doing is calling out my fellow members of the media. And what I have not liked, Johanna, and I've said this to you before on the air, and I'll say it again for our new audience, maybe just tuning in for the first time. It just seems that, you know, the idea about sort of an anti-ICE rhetoric that seems to be sort of prevalent, whether it's in Hollywood, whether it's in pop culture, I think at times it's a little disingenuous. Because let's be honest, and I tell people all the time, you know, the idea of detention centers or deportations, I mean, this predates Donald Trump. Okay, let's be honest about it. Because if we go back to the days of Barack Obama, of George W. Bush and Bill Clinton collectively, like, nobody deported more people in this country than Barack Obama. I mean, the numbers aren't close. Okay? But for whatever reason, Johanna, and again, maybe it's an agenda, for whatever reason, and I'll use this acronym very specifically, the liberal mainstream media, the major networks, the newspapers, whatever, bloggers, journalists, whatever, yes, the term the deporter-in-chief existed. I get it. For a lot of social activists, that term was very popular. But you know what, Johanna? For a lot of people watching NBC or CBS or ABC or watching MSNBC or CNN, you very rarely ever heard the word deporter-in-chief. You very rarely ever heard journalists calling out Barack Obama for deporting the most amount of people in American history. And again, I'm not saying and again, I don't want to sit here and sort of, you know, break down the current president's policies. But it just seems that, like, for whatever reason, it seems like, oh, ICE has been on people's radars for the last 3 years. To be honest, it should have been on people's radars for many years prior to this administration. It just seems like the average isn't there. And that's what bothers me.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, yes, people should be outraged about ICE, should have been outraged before. I think you're absolutely right. I think what has happened in the past 3 years is that people have learned about what ICE is doing, and therefore they are upset about it. But you're right. What ICE has been doing has been going on for a long time, right? and you know, deporting and separating families is something that happens every day in everyone's communities, not just at the border. And it's happening, and it's been happening for decades. And yes, I think, you know, the Obama administration was absolutely at the forefront of deporting the most people, right, that we had seen in a long time, and built a machine that is now being put on steroids under the Trump administration. So I think you're absolutely right on that. And I think the issue is that, you know, I think in part the media, so, and especially pop culture tends to reflect what's going on in the world at the time and what people care about, right? And for a long time, people did not know that this was happening. Just like, you know, people, I think, you know, to go back to Orange is the New Black, I don't think a lot of people outside of criminal justice and social justice advocates knew that prisons could be that bad, right? That sexual assault of detainees was or incarcerated folks were happening, that trans folks were being put in solitary, you know, confinement to be able to basically keep them away from guards to avoid having to give them medical care. Like, all those issues that are being raised by Orange is the New Black and stuff that some people did not know existed. And so I think what's happening is that we're seeing a lot of pop culture sort of reflect the new knowledge of the public and therefore the new outrage of the public. And, you know, as an immigrant rights advocate, I have learned in the past 3 years that I welcome all outrage on ICE, regardless of when it happens, because the fact is that it just means that you understand what's happening with families and what's hurting them, and therefore you're doing something about it. And you're willing to do something about it, right? And I think that's the point. So, yeah, ICE was always problematic. ICE has gotten away with a lot of horrible things, a lot of human rights violations. I think the difference, too, by the way, in terms of the last 3 years, is that they have escalated to doing things that we had not seen before to the level that they're doing it, right? The fact that there are about 2,500 children that are still missing, off in the ether of our country, that we are not 100% sure we're ever going to get back to reunite with our parents, that's enough to cause outrage. And I think that's part of the reason why people are so upset now.
No, listen, that's a fair observation. Folks, if you just joining us right now, it is 9:55 on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to have back here on the program the director of the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice. You can find out more information about the organization by going to www.njimmigrantjustice.org. Folks, do me a favor. I like to do this for every organization I feature on this program. Once you go on the website, click on the menu on the left, at the home button, you'll go down to get involved, click on donate, and if you have any disposable income, if you can live without a couple of pumpkin lattes during October or some, you know, latte macchiatos or whatever you like to drink in the morning, folks, on your way to work or on your way home, do me a favor. Instead of buying coffee 5 days a week, buy it 3 days a week. Take those 2 days, save them up at the end of the month, and if you want, go on there, click the donate button, and donate to a worthwhile organization here in New Jersey, again, the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice. By the way, Johanna, I will not charge you a commission for these plugs on the program.
Thank you for that.
All right.
Oh, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
No, of course. Now, Johanna, you brought up a good point right now about ICE practices. And, you know, listen, I'm just like you, we're both children of immigrants. I understand the struggles of immigrants. I saw my parents, obviously, as a child, having to learn a language, assimilating, you know, getting better jobs to provide for a better life for each other and for me. So obviously, you know, I applaud my parents' work ethic, which I've tried to inherit, the same, I'm sure, for yourself. But even people like my parents, Johanna, who, again, I think are very compassionate, they're very humanitarian, but people, whether it's your mom or my parents or that generation, per se, of an age demographic, might just be saying to us, you know what, I get it. I understand the struggles of immigration. I'm an immigrant too. But at the end of the day, like just like every other sovereign country that has laws on the books about immigration, hey, you know, why is the U.S. any different than Mexico? Why is the U.S. any different than any other country whose sovereignty should be preserved? And if preserving federal immigration law is what we're supposed to be doing, then what's the problem? You know, why the outrage or why the, you know, why sort of this hysteria? And for someone like you that works, you know, in a nonprofit for immigrant rights and immigrant justice, and let's be honest, Johanna, I mean, obviously, I mean, I do my homework on everybody, you know, more times than not, you know, the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice tends to be maybe a center left or if not just an outright progressive type of organization. Well, what do you say to someone like my parents who are not racist, who are not bigots, who are not prejudiced, but their frustrations would be like, hey, listen, enforcing federal law is what the federal government's supposed to be doing. So why the outrage? What do you say to someone that has that narrative?
Well, I think that there's an assumption that, you know, folks don't want necessarily federal laws. That's not the case. And you know, I don't think your parents are any of those things. I also don't think your parents are cruel, right? And when federal law and federal enforcement starts becoming just cruel, right? We can have, I think it was President Reagan who once said that we, that our immigration laws should be compassionate. Our immigration laws are not compassionate when you're literally putting children in cages. Our immigration laws are not compassionate when we are separating families. When your parents came to this country, you know, you could petition for a brother, a sister, a cousin to come. Generations before us, right, were able to come. I mean, we know of families that, you know, that dad came and then grandpa came and then brother came and people were able to come to this country. There was a process to allow them to do that. What has happened in the past, I don't know, 50, 80 years or so, is that, you know, laws have changed so drastically to close those doors that were open to someone like your parents and have made it so much harder for people to be able to come and have lost the compassion. The whole point of America was to be a place where people could come and find freedom and find hope and chase that American dream that everyone across the world is seeking, right? I mean, that was part of what we were making. You know, we were not making a country. Our founding fathers were not making a country to then literally close it off. Half of our founding fathers, most of our founding fathers and everyone else, like, our country was literally made from people who were fleeing another country in oppression, right? Like, that was how the U.S. was made. And so to sort of get away from that, I guess, value that was a part of how our country was made is that's the problem. And so let's be compassionate, you know, and let's give people a chance. People are asking for an ability to come to this country lawfully. You know, those folks who we're talking about on the border, many of them are refugees who are seeking refuge and have tried to go through the right paths of seeking refugee status. And the federal government is basically turning them away to their deaths. That's not who we are, or at least that's not who we should be, right? I mean, we've heard of, I think I heard of a ship that was literally turned away in the middle of World War II, filled with Jews who were trying to come to the U.S. looking for refuge, and we turned them away, right? And I think years later, we have realized that was a horrible mistake. So I worry about what we are going to be thinking about generations from now when we think about those children who are missing, or when we think about the families that have been turned away to go to their home countries to die at the hands of gangs that are literally murdering everyone. I just think that our country is giving enough and generous enough and should be compassionate enough to do it. I think if President Reagan understood that, I think a lot of people would understand that. And the cruelty is the problem, and that's the reason why we're dealing with the issue now.
Now, when you mentioned ICE practices before, and you talk about compassion within, let's say, the enforcement of federal law, Johanna, I mean, put it this way, you know, again, this is not the journalist in me talking now, this is now the academic talking. So, okay, let's put our thinking caps on, let's think critically, let's be proactive, let's come up with solutions. When it comes to enforcing the border, or when it comes to, you know, stopping people at the border, what should we be doing then? What's the solution? Again, if you're talking about practices that should be more humane and more compassionate, well, if families are leaving parts of Central America and trying to immigrate into Mexico and trying to come into the U.S., again, maybe some are seeking asylum, some are not, whatever the case may be, then give me something, again, and I'm not saying this to be, like, antagonistic, but I'm saying this more about, like, sort of academic. Okay, give me an outline off the top of your head about what could make this process more compassionate and more humanitarian then.
So I think what we have seen advocates talk about, and I'm in no way like a refugee expert, right? And so I'm sure others would be able to add a little more to this, but there have been systems where people come and they go through the port of entry and they say, I have a reason to be afraid of going back. I need refugee status. The federal government, you know, files the paperwork as they're supposed to, says, yes, welcome to the U.S. You now have to go through the process, right? There is a process for this. It's not like someone just comes to the door and they can go off and do whatever. They have to go through the refugee process. Now, what has been, what used to happen is that someone could then be released to a sponsor, to a someone who is willing to take them in, a family member. Some folks have family here, you know, and they could stay with them until they have a court order. And then they go back to the court where they have to plead their case for the refugee status. And it has worked before. I think the numbers are somewhere where like over 80% of the people who were in that position always came back because they had credible reason to be afraid and they wanted to be able to do it the right way. And they didn't want to have to hide from the federal government. They'd rather just go and plead their case and get refugee status or asylum case, right? Like, so I think that it's been done before. We just have to go back to thinking through what that looks like and ensuring that, you know, people have a chance. I think that's what it is. Many immigrants before us got a chance. And right now we're basically telling everyone, oh, well, you don't get a chance because we think that, you know, we, you know, to say, you know, we are a sovereign country and if we don't have laws, then what are we? I think it's interesting at the same time that we're literally talking about impeachment and we have a president that doesn't want to abide by constitutional law. If we don't follow the Constitution, then what are we either? You know, we can't pick and choose how we want to function. And I think in this case, there have been ways to do this, not necessarily putting people in detention. That wasn't always the case.
Well, speaking of that, as you mentioned, it wasn't always the case. Now, do you think that, again, listen, I'm not privy to the information. I don't have access to numbers or anything. But
yeah.
Do you think, and I've been adamant about this on the program forever, Johanna. Again, I just don't think that these are circumstances or practices that are just, they just popped up in the last 3 years. It seems like, again, I'm really just sort of adamant about the fact that I think this predates Donald Trump. And not to sort of beat a dead horse about Barack Obama, but it just seems, and you used a very interesting phrase before where it seems like the policies of Barack Obama, well, you know what, let's even go back, because I think even historically, and we can look at the information, whether it's George W. Bush or even going back as far back as Bill Clinton, I think systemically what we've seen is maybe like an evolution in the process where like little by little, maybe the practices have changed. And to your point now, you're saying that it's on steroids now. But it's not just, I think, steroids. I think for the period of 20 years, I think, going back to Bill Clinton, I think it's maybe, slowly but surely been marinating like a seed, and eventually it's been watered to the point where it's a full-blown tree now, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, every administration and every party is to blame here, right? Like, I think we have to be careful with that, and that's true. The difference in what makes Donald Trump specifically particularly different is that he is in a situation where he is stroking or fanning the flames of white supremacy and racism very, very openly, right? And I will be happy to, you know, discuss why I think some of the policies that were in place under the Clinton administration were also pretty racist and meant to hurt brown immigrants, right, specifically Latino immigrants. But I think that, but I think that the fact is that now we have reached a point where it is very blatant when you have a candidate for the presidency who literally announces their presidency by saying that Mexicans are murderers and rapists, right, or that people come from asshole countries. When talking about whether we allow people to come to this country, well, that dictates the kind of policies we're dealing with, and that's the reason why we're seeing this escalation of of the practices of ICE and also of the outrage from the public, right? Like, that's, I think, what has made the difference. But you're right, the brokenness of the system, it has continued to happen for decades, right? Under the Clinton administration, they issued I think that's when they started the 5-year and 10-year bans or bars, where someone who comes into the country unlawfully or without permission cannot fix their status, cannot adjust their status, unless they go back to their home country. And once they do, they're barred from coming back in 10 years later. They have to wait for 10 years. I've had a U.S. citizen who've had that problem because they fell in love and married someone who crossed the border, and now that person has to go back to their home country and wait for 10 years before they're able to reunite with their spouse, right? And the whole idea of it was, I mean, you'll recognize this rhetoric. It was to deter people from coming through the border. Well, it doesn't deter anybody to do anything. It just traps people in this country. That's the same thing with the child separation policy, that they are basically saying, well, we're going to separate the children from the parents so that we can tell people, do not come here, because this is what's going to happen to you. Well, when someone makes the choice that taking that risk is worth it because the alternative is death, you're making people make a tough choice. So the laws have been broken for a long time. Both parties are to blame for that. And I think we have to figure out exactly how to fix them now. And to fix them is to genuinely fix them, right? And to address the whole problem, not just the detention at the border or not just relationships with ICE, but also how are people allowed to come into this country? How are they allowed to migrate and chase that American dream the way everybody else has been able to do before us?
Fair observation, Joanna. I can respect that. Fair observation. And we'll get back to sort of some federal stuff in a moment, but I wanted to sort of get your thoughts on this as well. We were talking about pop culture before, and certainly how it affects the Latino community. And I had an interesting monologue today. I'm going to read you just a quick excerpt about my monologue, because I want to get your thoughts on this, because I think it becomes a topic of conversation a lot, leading back to whether or not there's a fixation on political correctness or how woke we are, whether it delineates social justice issues. But I started off the podcast today with my monologue. I'll sort of just read you a brief excerpt, and I said, Happy Columbus Day. I said, newsflash, for all my liberal and politically correct friends out here, I'm sure we'll hear some nonsense leading up to Monday. But let me make something very clear. Before Columbus arrived on our shores, do you think Indians were gathered at a table discussing how to appropriate land and settle disputes? Of course not. They were slaughtering each other. Now, I know reading history can be a struggle for some, but it's the truth. And this is the outrage that bothers me about Columbus Day. Folks, this is what's been happening when settlers arrived anywhere. It happened on this continent in addition to other continents on the planet. Okay? And it seems to me that, you know, a good percentage of people that are bitching about Columbus Day seem to either be getting 100% of their colonial historical information from internet memes or Disney's Pocahontas. Here's a newsflash for everybody. Everyone's ancestors brutalized someone else's ancestors. Welcome to the human race. Do me a favor, folks. Move on and let the rest of us enjoy the day off, even if you're incapable of doing it yourself. I said that to start the program, and I'm very specific, Joanna, because one of the things that I think drives me crazy, again, about the fixation of political correctness or, you know, fake outrage is, listen, I understand. I'm not going to sit here and glorify genocide or the practice of settlers. But, Joanna, we're educated people. We've read about history. And just like, and I'm not saying this to be trivial. I'm not saying this to be funny. But Joanna, settlers landed all over this planet for hundreds of years. Okay, people have been slaughtered throughout human history. It's what happens when people settle in areas. Okay, and again, I'm not condoning, I'm not saying that what happened during colonial America or any other times were correct. I'm not saying that. But the fixation hundreds of years later to start sort of rewriting history or to get all politically correct now, again, I just think it's overkill. And I think this is the type of stuff, Joanna, that turns people off, that just makes us like, you know what? Okay, I get it. You're being historical, but come on. It's this sort of like political correctness that turns even the most moderate person off, Johanna. And I think that this is, I think it's doing a disservice to us as a society, because we're becoming so fixated, again, on identity politics, on social justice consciousness, being woke. And at the end of the day, sometimes people don't want to hear that. Not because they're ignorant, but because people sometimes just get turned off about the fact that some people fixate on this stuff. I want to get your thoughts on this.
Well, you know, as someone who does this for a living, I can tell you being aware of the world injustices is exhausting. So I get it if someone says, you know what, that's not for me. I get that. You know, but I think, so I guess a question for you to sort of get clarity on this is, do you believe that Columbus slaughtered people and brutalized Native communities?
I don't believe Christopher Columbus personally engaged in it. I'm sure that maybe settlers during his time period before him or after him maybe did that. Again, I'm not going to sit here and make an accusation, but the idea that I think what we're doing now is, well, let's not call it Columbus Day, because we're glorifying someone that was part of a culture that slaughtered, you know, indigenous people. Let's call it Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. I just think, Johanna, when we start trying to be so politically correct and so woke, it can turn off even the most moderate person off. And again, I'm not condoning genocide that's happened.
Right.
You know,
right.
I'm not condoning genocide that's happened, but what drives me crazy about people is, I say to people all the time, listen, I'm not saying this to be humorous or be a smartass, but, you know, whether it was Columbus settling here or other parts of the world, like, do you think indigenous people sat around at a table appropriating land and, you know, coming to some sort of verbal agreement about how to sort of, sort of come to an agreement about, you know, resources and agriculture? Conflict's been a part of human history. You know, people have been slaughtering each other since the beginning of time. What's that?
Well, they have, right? That's true. We also used to cut people's heads off as a criminal justice system, right?
Absolutely.
And we used to hang people we have evolved as a society. We also used to believe that men could slap women, their wives around, right? And that was cool. We don't believe that now, you know, and I think as a society and as a culture and as a community, we can absolutely evolve and understand that things have changed, right? And I think the issue is that, like, you know, change is hard for everyone, right? Change is always hard. But I think to some extent, you know, the Native communities absolutely did sit around and discuss, you know, land and resources. They had treaties among their own, you know, different tribes had different treaties and they had their own systems in place. You know, I'm Ecuadorian, right? Like, I know, you know, the history of our Native communities, that there were so many, and there still are, right? So many Native communities. I actually was born in, I was born in Quito, but I was raised in Santo Domingo, and Santo Domingo actually has, and this is city of Santo Domingo, not Dominican Republic, but where they have a Native community that's called Los Colorados, and they literally put, like, almost like sazon, like the red paint that you use for, like, your sazon over their heads, and that's part. And I remember growing up being very aware that there was this Native community nearby, right? And they were there, and they were a community with, you know, I don't think talking about Native communities like they were a bunch of animals, like savages, right, is 100% historically correct either. I think part of it is, you know, we know and we understand, I mean, you know, most history books from way, way back were also written by men, right? Were women not doing anything revolutionary or impactful in society?
They were just not at the table
writing the books, right? And Native Americans and Native communities were also not the people that wrote the history books. So we can write Christopher Columbus as if he was some sort of revolutionary, when, you know, his own texts and his own diaries explain how he literally murdered people, right, and was part of genocide. Now, you're right.
Sure.
That was common practice he was Portuguese, right, and it was paid for Spain, like, or Italian paid by Spain. There were, like, a million different, right, Italy, Spain, Portugal, all these countries were literally doing the same exact thing across the world. You're absolutely right. But I think the concern, and I think the argument is, well, if we do know, historically understand now, that he did, in fact, was, you know, a colonizer who murdered people, and we understand that all these folks were literally eradicating whole communities, especially in the U.S., where we have now such knowledge of what horrors were done to Native communities, then why would we have a holiday named after him? I think that's the argument. Now, I'm not going to fight you on getting rid of a day off, right? Like, I get that.
Oh, no.
But I also think
listen.
That, right?
Oh,
like, I get it, right? But I also feel like part of that, and yes, maybe it feels like we are, you know, being a little too sensitive. But also, like, if someone had said, like, can we have a, you know, Adolf Hitler Day, I think we would have a problem with that, right? So if you are a member of the community, right, or you know that this person has atrocious things to a community, why would we honor them like they are some type of hero? We can. I guess the question I always ask is, like, what is it hurting you if you change it to Indigenous Day? And if you know, how does that affect us, you know, except actually thinking about what history looked like?
No, listen, Johnny, you make valid points. I think what I try to do on this program, and I mentioned it during my monologue, and I said, listen, there are a lot of things that I may not agree with about with Bill Maher, but I think what I try to do on this program is be a little Bill Maher-ish in the sense of, like, okay, I get it. I'm about policy. I want to be on the right side of things. I want to be logical. I want to be rational.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's some moments on this program that I become very – I sort of adopt my inner Bill Maher where, again, I don't know if you watch this program. I watch Real Time religiously. I actually enjoy watching Bill Maher every week. I don't subscribe to some of his positions. But, again, I think
–
But one thing that I'll tell you, and I'll take this to my grave, I think what Bill Maher nails, I mean, and he hits it out of the ballpark, is about political correctness and about fake outrage and about, you know, again, about, you know, topics like this. And I'm sure he'll talk about it tomorrow where he just is like, I get it. And listen, all the points you just raised, Johanna, are very valid.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't disagree with you. But I hope that at least where our audience tuning in tonight can say, oh, I get what Johanna's saying. But I get what Fernando's saying, I get why maybe he's channeling his little inner Bill Maher right now when it comes to stuff like this. You're right. Is it something that should really bother me or bother you or bother your mother or my parents? Mm-hmm. Probably not. But I think it's also systemic of not a bigger problem, but maybe a bigger issue of, like, we're becoming much more of a, not an overly sensitive society, but maybe the idea of what's woke, I think, may not rub everybody the right way. Am I making sense with this? Or at least, you know,
I totally get that. No, you're totally right. And, you know, I'm a student of sociology. I'm a big fan of thinking through how societies shift and change, right? Like the norms and expectations, and it's just so fascinating to me. And I think it's really interesting that we've gone through these kinds of changes, right? And I like to see them as sort of growing pains. Right. And so, is it easy? No, I'm sure that, you know, back in the, 60s, 70s, right, when women started going into the workforce in these huge numbers and people were talking about sexual harassment in the workplace, right, like, which is new to everyone. Right. And I'm sure there were plenty of men who said, what do you mean I can't tap her in the butt whenever I walk past her? What do you mean I can't comment on her breasts at work? What do you mean? Like, you know, and there was all this outrage of, like, oh my God, how in the world, why are we, everyone's so sensitive now. How in the world are we going to be able to do it? And we survived it just fine. And I think it made men better for it, right? And so it is hard, and I get it. And, you know, I think the term woke can be triggering sometimes. I also think that the term woke can also be shifted around a lot. You know, everyone has a different version of what woke is. I think that many of us who do this work also have to be very understanding and reflective on the fact that, you know, I live and breathe immigrant rights policy. That is my job. It's also something that is personally very important to me, right? And so I get it. And so then I am compassionate in understanding that other people are not living and breathing this all the time. So they may not know 100% how this works. Or why I'm outraged, or what is going on, right? And I think it is important for those of us who are fighting for social justice to be a little compassionate with people who may not necessarily understand or know what we're talking about, right? And I think the difference in what you're talking about, and I think the reason why people are so upset about this new era of wokeness and expectation of knowledge about social justice issues is that it comes with a little bit of also accountability. And sometimes people feel like, well, what do you mean? Like, everyone's being punished for not knowing all this stuff. And I don't think we should punish people for not knowing it. But I also believe that, you know, it's like, I'm going to do everything I can to educate folks about it. And then after, once you learn, once you know, right, just like about, you know, trans folks and gender identities, right, if someone is explained to you why someone would prefer a different pronoun, and then you continue to misgender them, right, then that means you knew it was wrong and you just did it anyway. If you know that Christopher Columbus murdered a bunch of people, then you probably don't want to be walking around honoring him, if that's, you know, if that's what we know. Knowledge is power, and once we know the information, we could do what we need with it. But I do agree with you, we need to be a little more compassionate as well.
Fair enough. Again, Joanna, and before I let you go, listen, I feel like I could have you on for two more hours, and we still wouldn't get through everything. But that's how great of a guest you are.
I love talking to you. It's always fun.
No, I appreciate it. But before I let you go, again, I want to thank you for your time, Joanna. You're always a sweetheart, sure. And you're always a wealth of knowledge on this program. I mean, I really appreciate you coming on here and bringing a different point of view to the show. And certainly, you know, I'll let my audience decide in terms of, you know, where they stand on the issues, and certainly where you and I can find a common place. And maybe at times we'll agree to disagree. But I think the important thing is to have a dialogue.
Absolutely.
And the important thing is to have a conversation. But before I let you go, again, folks, you know, if you're just joining us here at the moment right now, the director of the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice joins us here on Blog Talk Radio, Joanna Calle. When you go to www.njimmigrantjustice.org, do me a favor, on the left-hand corner, click on the home button. You'll scroll down to where it says get involved, and you'll see a donate link there. Do me a favor, click on that. And as I said, you know, it is October. I know people like to sort of have their pumpkin lattes or their macchiatos or whatever other coffee they like to drink. I'm a regular coffee black with almond milk. I'm not a macchiato, almond, you know, macchiato, whatever people invent these days. But do me a favor, folks. If you drink coffee every day, you know what, out of 5 days of the week when you go to work, drink it 3 days. Take the other two, add those totals up at the end of the month, and do me a favor. Click on the donate button. And donate what you can to the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice there, a very worthwhile organization here. Again, whose director, Joanna Calle, is always very gracious to come up here on the program on Blog Talk Radio. Joanna, before I let you go, any events coming up that we should be made aware of with the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice, or anything in the news cycle that maybe we should be made aware of concerning your organization?
Yeah, so there's a lot coming down the pike. So for folks who want to follow, obviously always follow us. We are at NJ Immigrant Justice on Facebook, Twitter. So we're always updating folks on latest news. One big thing that folks who have been paying attention to the Dreamers and DACA, the Supreme Court is going to be having hearings on DACA in November. So that will be coming up, and I'm sure folks will be talking about it. So if you care about Dreamers and you work with Dreamers, I know you have students who are Dreamers and many others who are working and supporting them, just be aware that that is going to be happening in November. I'm sure many of them are going to be very nervous to see what happens with DACA at the courts. So that's one big thing federally that is coming down. The other is for folks to see, we actually have an annual summit December 11th. This year, so you can actually go to our Facebook page, and there's save the date. We're going to be sending out information for folks to RSVP and join us. We like to gather once a year and talk about the state of immigrants' rights in New Jersey, so folks are welcome to join us then. And then look out on letsdrivenj.org on Twitter and Facebook, Let's Drive NJ, which is we'll be doing updates on the licenses effort for any actions that are going to be coming up in the next couple months.
Well, Joanna, you'll certainly be busy for the rest of 2019 going into 2020. Again, I want to thank you for your time. You're very gracious.
Thank you.
Again, a special thanks to your husband, because I'm sure that I'm keeping you from getting home, and I'm sure you want to, after a long day, you want to get home and talk to the hubby. So my cheers to him. I appreciate your patience, man. Thank you for
you know,
for how great, you know, your wife is to come on this program and to really educate us here and to really have a conversation. And again, Joanna, that's the important thing about today's political climate.
Right.
You know, it's about dialogue. It's about conversation. It's about being able to talk. And I think if we can do that civilly and do it as academically and civil and again, rationally as possible, I think we're advancing the causes for civility in our society. Joanna, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Absolutely.
Happy Indigenous Peoples Day on Monday, Columbus, whatever you celebrate on Monday. Enjoy your day off. And we'll
thank
talk again
you,
soon
you
here
too.
on Political Direct.
Good. Absolutely.
Thank you so
thank
much,
you so
Joanna.
Much. It was a pleasure.
Have a good night. Listen, by the way, thank you for supporting Insider NJ and the podcast. Tell everybody you know about your favorite podcast online, okay?
Absolutely. We'll be sharing it everywhere. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, John. Have a good night. Get home safe.
All right. You too.
All right.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
You too. Take care. All right, folks, here, 10:30 on the East Coast. What a great episode tonight, folks, with Joanna Calle, the director of the New Jersey Alliance for Immigrant Justice, folks. I can't say enough about how great she's been to the program. Very transparent, certainly. A wealth of information. Again, I'll let you, the audience, decide who you agree with in terms of what positions she takes, what positions this program takes, and, you know, who you, you know, what policies and ideology you subscribe to. Again, that's the great thing about the show, folks. Try to get you all the information and try to get you as informed as we possibly can. Again, folks, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, don't sweat it. You go to www.insidernj.com/podcast, and you can listen to it anywhere, anytime, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. If you have a topic or issue you want to hear about in the coming weeks, folks, please write to the show's inbox, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. Also, you can follow me personally on Instagram @ProfessorFernandoUribe. Also, hit me up on Twitter @ProfessorFUribe. As well, don't forget to like the show on Facebook. And ladies and gentlemen, I cannot remind you enough, go to www.insidernj.com for the best coverage of the political scene anywhere in the state of New Jersey. Nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Make sure you like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. Once you're on the website, folks, upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on that and you'll be enrolled automatically free of charge with the morning intelligence briefing there in your inbox every morning, whether you're having breakfast, going for a run. I'm sure you're checking your email. Guess what? When you're checking your email, it'll be right there waiting for you. The Morning Intelligence Briefing, courtesy of Insider NJ. Again, www.insidernj.com. The best politics, the best sources, the best journalism, each and every day, courtesy of Insider NJ. All right, folks, again, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight here. Obviously, October well underway. As I mentioned before, folks, it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Do check out the links on the Facebook page for Politically Direct. I am raising money again for breast cancer awareness via the American Cancer Society and making strides against breast cancer. So do me a favor, check it out. Donate whatever you can, and together we'll defeat breast cancer once and for all. All right, folks, again, and don't forget, whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry, homework, whatever it is you're doing, tune in, and you'll be happy that you did. And never forget that it's real, it's here, it's Politically Direct. Good night, Newark, New Jersey, the home of my alma mater. My graduate degrees come from Rutgers University. There are folks at the graduate school in Newark. Again, shout out to all my good people in Newark tuning in tonight here on Blog Talk Radio. Again, please party responsibly, folks. Enjoy the NFL weekend. Again, for those of us who are maybe had the game in the background tonight during tonight's broadcast, hey, a bit of a competitive game tonight on Thursday Night Football. Patriots lead the Giants 21-14 in the third quarter. Who would have thought it, folks? A very competitive game, to say the very least. Again, for those of you enjoy the NFL weekend, certainly for my Yankees, it looks like they'll be playing the Houston Astros in the American League Championship Series. Let's go Yankees as they pursue World Series championship number 28. But before getting to the World Series, they'll have to get past the Houston Astros. Tall order. But I think my Yankees are up to the challenge. Folks, again, enjoy the weekend. Be careful when you go out there. Again, love you all. See you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
happy. Oh, no, no, I get a good feeling.